So here's the idea. Art Bar. Everything you love about art and everything you love about bars together in one Zoom call. That was my pitch to four thoughtful artists and thinkers. You're about to hear what happened. Curator, director of Galleries, Micah Pollack, new from Brooklyn, describes how COVID-19 is growing her roots here. Artist educator Reem Bassous throws in exactly what should be done with those torn down statues. And artist, former art chair Gay Chan describes her work. You can participate anytime in Kane Ohe. And we'll jump in with Taylor Chang, curator. She runs the Doris Duke Theater. Taylor begins a thread here about experiences and voices, those that survive and those that are forgotten.
With so much content moving to the virtual space, one of the big challenges has been to be extra rigorous with what we decide to do online when we know that there's so much online and there's this kind of fatigue of constantly being in front of our computers that in and of itself changes the experience. So in a very nuts and bolts way, it's a whole new landscape that we're navigating, and sort of every single arts organization that, you know, exhibits films are navigating that as well.
So Taylor, group pleasure of enjoying films and performance together is getting fully reviewed.
What's exciting is that there's extremely creative collaborations and conversations that are happening, trying to take advantage of the new landscape that's in front of us. So there's a lot of opportunities, I think, to address a lot of the inequities within our industry at this time.
That concern with systemic inequity requires deep soul searching, you're saying, Taylor, on the exhibiting end. And for artists, Gay, your art practice has long been outside of museums in the community. And how have these pandemic times affected your work?
My practice for the last 10 to 15 years is really made for this moment. The work that I primarily do is through the moniker of Eating in Public and is trying to reinvigorate the demands for the commons and then creating situations for us to be prepared to live there. There are a lot of interest right now, and there's almost urgency to know how to do many of the things that I've been trying to establish for many years. So I'm actually pretty excited about this opportunity, and I'll put what I've done in two fields. One is more of a mitigation project. Me and now it's about 25 people, I think, half artists and half non-artists. We've come together as a collective called Seamsters Union, and we've been making masks for donations out of upcycled material. We've made over 3,000 masks and donated them so far. We repurpose our practice to do something that's very practical, functional, and tangible in terms of mutual aid. So that's one thread. The other is establishing free store and knowledge and practice about edible weeds. I've set up edible weed planters in front of my house and curbside, dug up weeds from my neighborhood, and then I offer recipes.
This is right outside your place on Lihikai in Kane Ohe.
Ever since I put out curbside projects, I've talked to so many people and predominantly strangers. So that's pretty exciting. Also on the curbside, I've put in a pretty significant free store now, mostly on plants. The momentum is primarily driven by a group I've joined on Facebook called 808 Green Thumbs. And these are maniacal, nerdy gardeners. So, you know, again, that we affirm together that the commons is a world of abundance instead of scarcity like capitalism. And it's always too much.
Well, what are you talking about when you say the commons?
I think that our imagination have been really kind of colonized by the nation state system and capitalist system. And so having commons, like when we establish free stores, when you can go somewhere where no one demands that you have to prove anything for you to leave something to share or take something that's there, except that you participate in taking care of that space of sharing. And that's, you know, very small pieces of commons, but nonetheless, it creates the opportunity for us to learn how to live there with other people.
How we live with others was like the subtext of those historic ala photographs you showed recently at the John Young, Micah. How has your approach to curating adjusted since COVID?
I agree with Taylor. I think at the beginning of this, there was this impulse to think about digitizing everything and making everything accessible in that way. I think there's also questions about what an institution is, what a museum is, what communities we serve. In the past 20 years, there's also been a real interest in hosting talks and lectures and screenings and engaging in a kind of extended practice that might have been based on relational aesthetics. And I think now we really do have to think somewhat differently about what it means to bring people together, what that looks like in an art space. And again, I've been so moved by watching protests outside of museum spaces, you know, in the street, and seeing people move to come together around political issues.
So Reem, painter that you are, what do you make of the street expression we've been seeing?
It's been great to see protest signs. I mean, I'm a huge fan of propaganda art, and it's just been very exciting to see, whether it be in Mauna Kea or in the Lebanese protests or the Black Lives Matter protests.
I guess now is not the time to start drawing lines and saying this is art and that is not.
I think the thing to consider is whether it has substance or not. It's not that anything goes, but just because this is a moment doesn't mean everybody should be doing work just for the sake of doing work. You really have to be thoughtful. It has to have substance. And that's what separates it, in my opinion.
I guess I've never found it very useful to draw lines between what is art and what is not art.
Micah?
I think one of the big shifts in terms of people's thinking in the art world that I'm participating in is noticing, at least at the beginning, when there were no more art fairs, how people seemed relieved. This demand to ship giant works of art across the globe, just the carbon footprint that certain parts of that industry were taking up, I'm hoping that that will get interrogated. And something that, just on a personal level, when President Trump demanded that people working in meat processing plants had to go back to work, I realized that I shouldn't be eating factory processed meat at all, and shifted to finding local protein sources. And it's been incredible as a sort of connection to this place, which I hadn't expected, and as a way to meet my neighbors who have connections to people fishing and to wild boar and to sustainably raised chicken. It's kind of crazy that it took this for me to realize that I shouldn't be buying meat that's been shipped to this island from the mainland. But yeah, I guess it's part of what Gay said, just thinking about some of these systems that have become invisible, really.
Right. And Taylor?
We're all being forced to be creative in ways that we never really anticipated or expected. And sort of as an extension of that, we know that that is going to directly impact the art that we typically exhibit or promote within our organizations or within our practice. It will only benefit us as a community, as a society, to be able to creatively integrate the idea of art, the idea of what art can be for us, into every single aspect of our lives. If we want to change the systems that we live in, it's going to take, you know, momentous amount of creativity and artful thinking. Otherwise, it's back to business as usual. So it's worth it to embrace the blurriness between what is art and what isn't, and to question sort of how we used to consider art to be maybe pre-COVID and what we consider to be more important art now.
Are you kind of saying that art is a practice or an approach, has broader applicability now, maybe? Because art as a separate field, I'm losing the definition of it.
I think that blurriness of what we consider art to be right now is a great one, because it gives everybody a chance to define it for themselves and to prioritize it and use it in ways that benefits them and their communities. I don't think museums or organizations that are sort of, you know, stereotypically be pillars of art are always the best pillars of art in the community, especially during times like this.
You're pointing to a possible shift in values. Micah?
For example, I think the discussion about what statues should be in public spaces right now is really fascinating. And, you know, it feels very central to sort of what we're all talking about and paying attention to. I'm delighted to see people thinking about the histories that these monuments represent.
I think it's not enough to just take them down. I think that they need to be taken down with meaning, and that there should be a response and there should be a lot of documentation. And I think that rather than just making them disappear, I would like to see them reinstalled with a plaque describing what these people have done. I think that's really important, and it's part of education.
You know, it's interesting to kind of think of erasure in our practice, what we choose to put up on a wall in a gallery space, what we decide to keep hidden away in the vault, and how in films, how there is erasure in the ways we tell stories in cinema. We're reckoning with centuries of erasure of Black communities, of Indigenous communities, that continues to happen right now. And when we're questioning sort of the economies that we're working within, you have to look at every single part of the process, from the making of the thing to the exhibiting of the thing to what happens after the thing. When we think about reckoning with centuries of inequity, you have to be practicing system thinking. And so when we're looking at sort of, you know, art industry or an art world, that's what we're experiencing right now. We're like having to question every single part of our process to reckon with what is the best way to continue with our practice during these times.
I think a lot of us don't have a choice. I'm going to sound really romantic right now and say that this is an addiction, this practice. A lot of us don't have a choice and we find a way to do it. And small scale, large scale, whatever. You know, I have a super tiny apartment. I have a lap desk and that's what I work on. And, you know, you just keep going on. No choice in the matter. And I'm not even thinking about exhibiting or connecting, or this is just a way of survival. It's a very fundamental way for me to survive personally. And I mean, I can't help anyone in any capacity unless I'm surviving. And so it begins here.
What's your work about now?
For the past year, my research has been about death, cultural practices around death, different speculations about what happens after death. It's connected to my dealing with post-war survival, having come out of a brutal history, and just kind of questioning, well, where have they all gone?
You're talking about events and people lost in the Lebanese Civil War, which you experienced.
And this continues to happen. So all of this is not new to me. The protesting is not new. What a lot of people are calling a moment in American history is not a new thing for me. Push it all the way to the end where people actually die from this. What happens then? So that's where I'm at right now.
I mean, it's so essential that you are part of this conversation. Like, you know, from the exhibitor perspective, we have this, like, I feel like I have a responsibility to do whatever we have to do to make sure that the art that artists are making right now is going to be properly supported. So what is an exhibitor's responsibility to make sure that there's always going to be channels and spaces in which that work will be continually brought forth and not erased from the community that we're in?
Taylor Chang, committing to your stories. Also, Reem Bassous, Micah Pollock, and Gay Chan. Micah's galleries at UH are opening again in August. Taylor's indispensable Surf Film Fest is entirely online right now through August 2nd.